Boker Tov world. Today's daf in Masechet Sanhedrin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Lamed Aleph. We're still holding on daf Lamed Amud Beis, and we got up to this new sugya. We'd finished the question of being Betzarif Edus, and today we get to a different element of Tziruf Edus, which is the question of whether the Edim have to agree on every detail. So remember that we have two different sets of questioning witnesses, and the one is called the Bedikot. The Bedikot are any number of petty details that are not really germane to the case, but nonetheless are ways of trapping up the witnesses. So in the cross-examination, we attempt to trip them up. And now the question is, if the issues that were asked were totally ungermane, so they're irrelevant to the case, and we just simply brought them up in order to trip up the witnesses, if they actually contradict each other, is it important or not? Now, obviously, in questions where we have in the pasuk that we have to do these bedikot, and this is something that the Chazon Ish learns is a deraisa distinction between the bedikot in capital cases and bedikot in civil cases. So in such cases, for sure, any type of trip up whatsoever because of Yitzilu Ha'eda and other diyukim and psukim are actually going to passel the case. And you're not able to prosecute where the witnesses are not 100% consonant. But the question is when it comes to Dinei Momonos. So even though there are some who learn that this is an issue of the Rabbanan being makel on the Bedikot, and it's only because of the smooth sailing of financial intercourse, the Chazon Ish learns that it's actually a difference in D'oraisa. Okay, this is a Machlokas Achronim, but the bottom line is that today, Omar Rav Yehuda, Eduta Makcheshet Zo et Zo BeBedikot Kshira. So if there's contradictions in these irrelevant questions, and we'll talk about what we call irrelevant, then according to Rav Yehuda, that should not make any difference, and we could still actually go ahead and rely on these witnesses. So Rava says, now let's try to figure out what he means, that they contradict each other. What does irrelevant mean? So I would say, look, Mistabra Milta de Rav Yehuda, so now the question is, you've got one witness who is saying that he took the money out of a black wallet when he lent him the money. And another guy says, no, he took the money out of a beige wallet when he lent him the money. Now, that type of detail obviously is not germane to the case. They're both talking about the same money. He lent $100. Now, the question of where he took the $100 from, that must be what Rav Yehuda means. But let's say they would be arguing about the way that the coinage looked. So one of them says, oh, I took out old coins. And the other one says, no, they were bright and shiny coins. Now, that is not a peripheral issue. That is a question of what precisely he lent him. So even though it doesn't affect the bottom line, but it does affect the testimony. And if that's the case, echad eimer mona shachor, which he's just using the same words that he used for the wallet. Mona shachor means old, doesn't mean black. Ve'echad eimer mona means blackened. Ve'echad eimer mona lavan, which doesn't mean white, it means silvery. In that case, I believe that Rabbi Yehuda would even disregard this testimony in a civil case. Now, certainly in the capital cases, now that would be even the difference between a black wallet, so to speak. In other words, let's say somebody would say the villain was wearing typical villain black clothing, dressed like a yeshiva bocher when he stabbed his stiletto into the other guy's heart. And the other guy says, no, actually, he was dressed like one of these breast lovers in white. Now, that the question is, that for sure would make the difference when it comes to Dinei Nefashis. That's what the implication here is, if Rav is right about what Rav Yehuda is saying. So in other words, the equivalent in a Dinei Nefashis, a capital case of Arnaki Shchora, B'Dinei Nefashot, you're claiming that that would not be kosher. Look, The problem is that Rav Chisda said that if you have a case, let's say you have a murder case, and one of them says he killed this guy with a sword, and another guy says he killed him with a stiletto, you know? So that is not called vidarashta, vichakarta, vishaalta, heitev. That's the mucker for this idea of cross-examination. You have to examine it, you have to investigate it, you have to look into it completely, and then if emet nachon hadavar, okay, nachon means that it all works out. This is not called nachon. Ein ze nachon. Let's say one was saying that, here it says if one was saying that the villain was dressed in black and the other one says he was dressed in white, then that's okay. Wait a minute, but Rava just explained that according to Rav Yehuda, we were only saying that that equivalent case would be okay in a civil case only. And here, Rav Chisda is saying it would be okay even in a murder trial. And here it's saying, Harei ze nachon. So what's your problem? So they argue. I understand what you're asking me from Rav Chisda. It's all right. Rav Yehuda doesn't agree with Rav Chisda. I mean, what's the big deal? Gavra, gavra, karamita. This is a question. It's a machloket. Okay. Now, Nardoi Amri, afilu echad omer mane shechor v'echad omer mane lavan, even I say the Nardoi, I say that even if they're arguing about the type of coinage, was it nice, bright, silvery coins, or was it old, blackened coins, that's also considered to be a proper tziruf. So, I mean, what's the logic in that? I mean, is it because, come on, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Korcha? In other words, we're saying that, well, remember, according to Rabbi Yehoshua ben Korcha, as we saw yesterday, even if one of them is testifying to a loan made on Sunday we had, and the other one making it on Thursday, right? So we said that, according to Rabbi Yehoshua ben Korcha, is mitztarif, even though it's obviously two separate issues. So over here, you're telling me the same thing, that it's, well, who cares? So since Rabbi Yehoshua ben Korcha said it's only the bottom line that counts, the bottom line of old blackened coins and silvery coins is 100 bucks. That's same bottom line. So maybe that's what you're saying. According to Rabbi Yehoshua ben Korcha, since we only look at the bottom line, it's irrelevant. Yeah, but that's silly. I mean, all that Rabbi Yehoshua ben Korcha was talking about was the question of whether they have to see the same event. But if they contradict each other about what they saw, which was the same event, why would Rabbi Yehoshua ben Korcha say that that's any better than anybody else would? I mean, it's a contradiction. That's part of the cross-examination. So, when did he say tziruf? Only hechad olam kach shuadodi. Obviously, only when they're not contradicting each other. But in this case, you're trying to tell me, well, it's innate in Rabbi Yehoshua ben Korcha, even if they contradict each other. That's ridiculous. What was one to do with the other? So obviously, it's not going to help us to say that according to the Nardoi, we're going like Rabbi Yehoshua ben Korcha. It doesn't help one bit. Okay, so what is the logic of the Nardoi, who are arguing with Rabbi Yehuda and the way Rav explained it, that even if it was a contradiction in black and white coins, that would still be okay, according to Nardoi. What's their svara? I'll tell you. They actually are going according to the way Reb Shimon ben Elazar explained the famous machlokas of Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. And he was going according to this bright of the Tanya. Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. There was never a machlokas between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel where there's a contradiction between two groups of witnesses. Shtei kitei edim. Where over there, one says the loan was of 200 zuz, and the other one says the loan is of 100 zuz. That's not a contradiction, because 200 zuz includes 100 zuz. So in other words, we have two sets of witnesses that are agreed minimally on this idea that there is a 100 zuz loan. That everybody would agree to. The question was whether it's only one group of witnesses. We only have two witnesses. One of those witnesses says that it's a 100, and one of them says it's 200. Now, over there, the question is you don't start with the same witnesses. That's where we have the machlokas that Bechamai says, nechlecha edutan, and that in that case, that's considered to be a contradiction, because, look, it doesn't matter whether one is included in the other, but the bottom line is, they're disagreeing on a crucial detail of the cross-examination. But in this approach of Reb Shimon ben Elazar, Beit Hillel insists that even that is not considered to be a contradiction in the cross-examination. Why? Because Yesh Bichlal Matayim Manas. According to Reb Shimon ben Elazar, Beit Hillel is saying that as long as you've got what there is in common, a bottom line in common, you could be Mitzarif the witnesses, even if they don't agree on the details. That's what the Nahar Doyer are saying. They're saying that, well, according to that, Beit Hillel would have allowed us to be Mitzarif witnesses, where some say the coins were old, and the other one says the coins were new, and nonetheless, we're going to be Mitzarif it because of the bottom line. Okay, how about where we've got one witness saying, I saw him lend a barrel of wine. And one says, I saw him lend a barrel of oil. Now, there was actually exactly this kind of thing came in court to Reb Ami's Beis Din. And Reb Ami said, well, that's called two witnesses to a bottom line because the value of a barrel of wine is included within the barrel of oil. Whoa, okay, this is like really looking at the bottom line. We don't even look at where the bottom line came from. We're talking about how much is it worth. So who was he talking about? Who did he base Reb Ami? Which one of the shitas? Is it maybe according to Reb Shimon ben Elazar that we just quoted about Beis Hillel? No, I mean, Reb Shimon ben Elazar said that Beis Hillel holds that Yesh Bichlal Matayim Maneh. That's where they're not arguing about some essential element of where. They're just talking about what was the bottom line. But, I mean, if you got two completely different stories, I mean, one of them said wine and one of them said oil. Where did anybody ever say that Beis Hillel would say could be Mitzarif that? That's like completely and totally different. They're two different events and two different amounts. I mean, it's crazy. Where do we see that you could be Mitzarif that? Reb Ami, we have to say, was talking about a case not where it was a barrel of wine or a barrel of oil, but actually what happened is that one witness says, in front of me, he admitted to owing the money of a barrel of oil. He owed him that amount of money. And the other one says, in front of me, he admitted to owing him the value of a barrel of wine. So what Reb Ami is saying is that since in the end, the difference is irrelevant, whether it was wine or oil, it's again, that we're talking about the value. That basically is one is saying $200, which was the value of a barrel of oil. And the other one was saying $100, which was the value of the barrel of wine. So that he wants to say that is actually the equivalent of that psak of Reb Shimon ben Elazar. So he's extending the idea of Reb Shimon ben Elazar to extrapolating it to values that are built on different physical entities and say, well, that doesn't matter. Since the bottom line was we're talking about value, then it's irrelevant to us where the value came from. Let's talk about another case. Let's talk about a case of location. So, of course, normally if there's an argument about location, then that is not an argument of bedikas. That's an argument about chakiras, right? So, because you have to be open to attack by zomimim that say, how could you claim to have been with us in City X when you have been there in City X to witness that event? You were with us in City Y at that time. But what about if it's a question not of location, but of precise location? You agree on the address, you agree on the city. The question is, one says that it was on the bottom floor of the house, and the other one says it took place on the second floor of the house. So, Echad Omer Bidyutal Yona, the Echad Omer Bidyutal Atachtona. What's the din over there? Omer Rebbe Chanina, Rebbe actually had paskened about a case exactly like that, Maaseh Balifnei Rebbe, and he was Mitzarev Edutan, because he said, look, you don't have to go so far as Rebbe Elazar. I mean, this could be true according to the way we understood Rebbe Yehuda. It's no different than a black, you know, a black wallet or a white wallet. That's irrelevant over here, and the location of first story or second story is irrelevant. Now, we also, interestingly enough, we also went on to teach something in the Mishnah that has some implications about the general idea of respect for the privacy of information that you are privy to. So it says over there that minayin lekishet, say a dayan walks out of the bezdin, shelo yomar, well, I felt you really were in the right, but what could I do? The other judges were against me, you know, they had the majority, but you have my sympathy because I think you were really right. You can't say that. So we said, we had two different gersaot. We said either it was because it's Helech Rochel Megalas Sod, or it was because of Lo Telech Rochel Be'amech. That was the gersa we had in the Mishnah. Now, the Braita actually brings both of those psukim. So Tanur Rabbanan, that's the only difference here between the Braita and the Mishnah, which is why the different Mefarshim understand that the Mishnah must have differed from the Braita. Otherwise, why the heck are we looking at a Braita here? Must be because one of those psukim did not appear in the Mishnah like there are Gersaot that indeed support. But in the Braita, we've got both. So Tanur Rabbanan, minai in the Kishiyet Se Lo Yomar, well, Hareini Mizakeh, but Chaverai, we're mechayvim. What can I do? Ma eser, chaverai, rabu alai. Talmud lomar, lo telech rachil be'amecha, ve'omer, holech rachil megales sod. So over here, we have actually two different psukim. And there was a case where there was a certain Talmud that people were talking about him, that he had casually disclosed something that had been discussed in the Beis HaMedrash that had been 22 years ago was discussed in the Beis HaMedrash. This is like the kind of thing, you know, Reb Barnea would open up on the, you know, well, 50 years ago we were in the Beis HaMedrash and discussing that. So he figured, okay, you know, we're not going to worry about something that's long ago. Well, people were actually whispering about this. Can you imagine the guy actually talked about something that was said in the Beis HaMedrash? And it was just 22 years ago. Can't believe it. Okay. So what happened? They threw him out of the Beis HaMedrash. Avke Rabami mi be Midrasha. Rabami threw him out of the Beis HaMedrash. Said, we can't have a guy like this who's a blabbermouth and things that we talk about in the Beis HaMedrash, what they're going to come out in public? Like, what? Now, 50 years from now, all of a sudden, the whole world has to know what we were talking about in the Beis HaMedrash. That's not the kind of guy we want in our Beis HaMedrash. So it's interesting. You know, the Rush has a beautiful sefer, which is called the Orchot Chaim. And over there, he talks about things like this, the type of anargas that come out of the Gemara. So the way, and he always puts it in a very poetic way. So what he writes is, Sod acher al tegale, gam et advarim asher yedabru lefanecha shalo al derech sod, tamneim bikirot libecha. Things that people said in front of you, they never indicated that it was private in any way and that they don't want you to say it. Hide them deep in your heart. Gam im tishma'emi acher. Not only that, somebody else comes along and says to you that information, right? Says, I heard X, Y, Z. Do not say to them, Al tomar kvar shamati zeh. Yeah, I heard that also. No. You know nothing about it. You see? That is the anhaga of a proper emes v'nachon hadavar. Lord help us. No, it's what he's saying. Even information that the person didn't tell you was in any way sensitive, you never know. You're talking about something, and it just turns out that somebody hears this, that to him it's relevant, You're kidding. I always thought that he was being honest about that deal. Whatever, you never know what's going to come out. Oh, you mean he knows so-and-so? Now, wait a minute. If he knows so-and-so, then... So, therefore, says the Rush, forget it. There's nothing that's not sensitive. Stop being a blabbermouth. So that's one of the things that he sees in the Gemara. Boy, what a different world that would be, huh? Okay, we're ready now for our very own non-blabbermouth, but marvelous leader. By the way, I sent you a picture of a whole new Richie hat that store, you know, and you never responded. That beautiful new store. I sent it to you, a beautiful picture with Alon. Alon designed the store. He didn't design the hat, but it's a real Richie hat that he's selling over there at Sherlock's. You better get moving.
Anyway, I'm going to be getting moving once they Shabbat. I'm flying.
What?
First time. But to the Big Apple.
Yep.
To so I big.
May not be present at Saturday night. Who knows what's going to happen.
Big Apple?
The Big Apple. Yeah.
It's a rotten apple.
For the worms. For the worms.
Oof.
Worm tongues.
Oof.
It's family and business. What can I do? By the way, there's no Indian statute of limitations.
No. Nope.
My son-in-law says he's going to write a blockbuster of a book.
I don't know. You better tell him the Gemara.
No, he already told me. He said the only problem is you're not going to be able to read it because it won't come out in 50 years. Because there's, what do you call it? So, you know, they have
rules of... Yeah, I hear. I don't understand why your son-in-law is putting limits on your lifetime, but all right. Well,
it's past 120.
I understand, but this is Richie we're talking about. Life begins at 90, man. You barely started.
Am I greater than
All right, go for it, Sir Richard. Kol zeman shemevi ra'aya. Look, if a guy comes back to court and he has new evidence, he can be soteret hadin. Because of the new evidence, he could say, okay, you're talking about statute of limitations. There's no statute of limitations on my being able to discover new facts. So then the court will, in effect, if it turns out that based on the new evidence, they have to flip the decision, then they will flip the decision. But, Omar Lo, what about in a case where the court says to a guy, okay, look, you know, we can't be always open to restructuring this. You've got 30 days to bring any evidence that is there. Okay, so kol ra'ayot sheyesh lecha haveh mikan ad 30 yom. We're giving you 30 days to bring your evidence. If he finds that evidence within 30 days, fine, then he can come back and he can demand a retrial based on the evidence. But if it's after 30 days, then he can't, because we assume that if that evidence is real, he would have been able to locate it within 30 days. If it's all of a sudden, like 2 years later, there's a contract, that probably is a forgery and it took him all of that time to get it arranged. So because of that, we use actually pretend to a statute of limitations on presentation of evidence in order to avoid giving people enough time to create forgeries. Omar Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, that doesn't make sense to me. I mean, so what's a poor guy supposed to do if evidence shows up years later and he didn't know about it? So because he couldn't find it at the time, so therefore he loses his case? Well, I don't understand what's the justice in that. Maya says, Eshelo matza betok shloshim umatza lach shloshim. So there is no statute of limitations, even if the court insisted that he present it. Now, how about, now this is always referred to, remember, as the first case of Eidut and the Eidut Achrona, the Raya Achrona. So the second Raya case is where they told the guy, look, you got to bring your witnesses. He says, I don't have any witnesses. Where they say, bring a raya. And he says, I don't have any raya. And then, I don't know, a year later maybe, he finds his contract or he finds his witnesses. So then, we're not going to accept that. Now, that means that even the witnesses were afraid maybe were paid off, and it took him a year to find somebody who was ready to accept payment for it. So, Ariza ain't no clue. And here, too, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel said, well, Maya says, I don't get it. How's he supposed to? He's supposed to give up on his claim because he couldn't find these witnesses. They were out of town, you know, and 20 years later they come back. I mean, what about if he never knew that he even had a raya? And now he suddenly finds the raya. So that is going to be, of course, accepted. How about, now this is not a machlokas. How about if he all along had claimed he doesn't have any witnesses, and he sees things are not going well. They're paskening. They're about to pasken against him. And so he suddenly gets up and say, all right, where is Mr. Joe and Mr. Schmo, my good old witnesses? And suddenly they appear. Now, wait a minute. You just said you don't have any witnesses. And now when things are going bad. So in other words, okay, when you get desperate, you've got your false witnesses all paid off. You're just nervous about presenting them. That for sure is ridiculous. Or the whole time he's been saying he doesn't have any kind of raya, and when the court is about to pasken against him, he says, well, I'm going to show you my contract now. And he suddenly puts his hand in his pocket and takes off the contract. That is very suspicious. And there everybody agrees. If there's motzi raya mitachat pundato, hareza punda is actually not his pocket, it's his money belt. Hareza in oklum, that is obviously, he had it the whole time and claimed he didn't have it. That is just a last-ditch attempt in which he's ready to try using his forgeries. All right, so now, question is, if somebody is going to bring in a raya after there was this arbitrary, really, statute of limitations because the court made it, we give you 30 days. So there, Omar Rabba Bar Avuna, in that question, and then we have this machlokas between Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel and the Rabbanan, the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, that it's not fair to give a guy an arbitrary limit where he can't find his raya, and therefore we paskin like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Whereas Rabba Bar Avuna is also quoted as saying ridiculously, the halacha is not like the Chachamim. What? Obviously. You just said the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, so I think I could figure out on my own that Memele Yadana Dein Halacha Kechachamim. I mean, obviously, if it's like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, it's not like the Chachamim. No, what I mean is, it is totally not like the Chachamim, which means, if I hadn't told you that, you might have thought that when we say halacha k'Rishim Gamliel, we mean that the proper approach in the courtroom is to accept later evidence because it was only an arbitrary time limit. But suppose there was a Beis Din that actually paskin like the Chachamim, and they refused to accept that evidence and they gave their final psak. I might have thought that that would stand because it's bidi avad. Therefore, comes on Rabbi Bravuna say, again, however, it is not like the Chachamim in any way. And even if they made the mistake of paskening like the Chachamim, we are still going to reopen the case and possibly reverse the ruling. Okay, then the next case is not where they arbitrarily assign him a time limit, but they tell him, okay, you have any witnesses? No, I don't. You have any rayas? No, I don't. And there, too, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel said that, well, what's he supposed to do if he didn't know? Omar Rabba Bar Avuna Om Rabbi Yochanan, halacha k'divrei chachamim. Here, we paskin like the chachamim. And furthermore, Rabba Bar Avuna Om Rabbi Yochanan said, and halacha is not like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. And, of course, we said, well, obviously, if you paskin like the chachamim, I'm pretty smart, you know. I know that the halacha is not like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. And here it comes to tell me something else. The reason Rabbi Yochanan says and finds it necessary to say what appears to be completely repetitive is I might have thought the Bahi ain't a lot of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Habakulu Halacha Kerubshim and Gamliel. What he's trying to tell, not I would have thought, he's trying to tell us that this is the only case that in Halacha Kerubshim and Gamliel, because in all other cases of the Mishnah, the Halacha is like Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, and the reason that he said this is actually seems to contradict totally what he said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Mafukmi Adi Omar Rabba Baravchana Omar Rabbi Yochanan, that Kol Makom Shoshana Reb Shimon ben Gamliel B'Mishnatenu Halacha Kamoto Chutz mi arev v'tzidon v'raya achrona. Now, this is the second case of ra'aya, where we say the first case does go like Reb Shimon Gamliel, but the second case of where he claimed, I don't have any ra'aya, I don't have any witnesses, in that case, we do not paskin like Reb Shimon Gamliel. So, according to Rabba Bar Avuna, Rabbi Yochanan is saying that the only case where the halacha is not like Reb Shimon Gamliel is Raya Achrona. Masha Enkein, the way that Rabba Bar Bar Chana actually had said it, not Rabba Bar Avuna's approach, was that there are three cases, and that was Orev, Tzidon, and Raya Achrona. So it turns out that the question of that general ruling like Reb Shimon ben Gamliel is a machlokas between Rabba Bar Bar Chana and between Rabba Bar Avuna. How far did Rabbi Yochanan go to paskin always like Reb Shimon ben Gamliel? Now, there was a case where there was a yenuka, the Tefa'u Ladina Kameda Reb Nachman. There was a kid, and when we say there was a kid, there's a machlokas we've shown him over here, whether we mean literally a kid, or do we mean a adult who we're calling a kid because he doesn't know anything about his father's business. And the Gemara says elsewhere that even an adult in his father's business after his father's sudden death is basically a kid because he doesn't know what's going on. So that's a question. If it's talking about literally a child, which is the mashma'ut because he went crying down the street, so then there's a problem because it certainly seems from here that we'd be able to collect a leaned property even from a child in the din, whereas normally we assume you can't take the child to din until he grows up. Okay, so Tosfos talks about how this case would have worked out. But in any event, what was important to us is relevant to our issue about the question of suddenly presenting proofs or witnesses after claiming that you had none. So there was a child that had come to the Beis Din by Reb Nachman, and he said to him, do you have any witnesses? And the kid says, no. Did you have any raya, shtar, something? No. So Reb Nachman said, well, I'm very sorry, you're going to have to pay. So the poor kid is walking down the street, bawling his head off. All his money was taken away that he thought he inherited. So people hear him, and they come running to him. No, wait a minute. We know what's going on with your father. That debt, that was paid off. We witnessed it, that it was paid off. We'll go to court on your behalf. And they do. So Reb Nachman said, in this case, obviously the fact that the child said, no, I don't have any witnesses. Well, how's he supposed to know he has witnesses? Over here, even the Rabbanan would have bemoaned to Reb Shimon ben Gamliel that if the guy says, I don't know, and he wasn't expected to know, so then Yenuka, Bemili, Diavua, Loyada, a child actually wouldn't know what's going on with his father. How's he going to know his father paid this off? And there was another Maisa of a woman that was escrow. So she was an escrow holder, and she presents the shtar to the court because they said to the court that she's got the contract. But she said to Reb Nachman, I happen to know that this contract was paid off. And I'm just holding it because they hadn't gotten a chance to rip it up, or they wanted a record of it. So it was given to me, but it was paid. And Reb Nachman believed her, and he would not accept the shtar to be able to collect with. So Rava asked Reb Nachman, now, wait a minute, where did you get that from? I mean, it would seem to be that you only paskin this according to Rebbe, Because remember, we had the sugya before. According to Rebbe, you can actually transfer a shtar by handing it over to someone else. That's called otiyot niknot bimesira, an old Gavi idea. So that if you simply give it to him, giving it to him is giving the actual contract, not just giving the paper that the contract is written on, but even the power of the contract to collect is given over by handing it over. And that seems to be what you believe over here. So what you're saying is that since in this case, this woman who is admitting that she is nothing but an escrow depositor, she could have said, this contract was given to me. And therefore, we would have had to believe, if she says it was paid, it's her contract. And you're saying that she apparently has a MIGO, and she could have claimed that it was hers. But the problem is, we don't paskin like Rebbe. So I don't understand, says Rava to Reb Nachman, on what basis you were able to ignore a perfectly valid contract just because the escrow holder claims that it was paid off. Omar Lay, this is different. Because she could have simply destroyed the contract. It was in her rishos. And we didn't know that it was in her rishos. The fact that these guys claim they get, she could say, I don't know what they're talking about. I never saw a contract like that. So we have to believe her because of the MIGO, that the very existence of the contract is all based on her willingness to stand by the truth in this issue. Now, there was another version of this. Ikari Amri. That actually Reb Nachman refused to believe the woman, lo yimne Reb Nachman, and he was going to collect utilizing this contract that had been given to her to hold an escrow. And Rava said to Reb Nachman, but why don't you believe her? If she had wanted to, she could have simply destroyed the contract. So she has a MIGO. And in this version, Reb Nachman says, look, this shtar had a henpek on it. So that means that it was already certified by a court. It was a well-known contract. She can't simply say, I don't know what you're talking about. Once it's already mischazik in the bezden, we don't say, well, she could just burn it and have it disappear. So because of that, it's not enough to just have the woman deny. Okay, that's the problem. Because, look, it shouldn't make any difference. I mean, the way that I just presented it is the way Rashi understands it. It's a more chomer contract because the court has certified it. But as Tosis points out, what's the difference? I mean, she could have burnt up the whole thing, certification and contract. I mean, so what does that mean? It's a more chomer contract. How obviously Rashi is learning that we have to weigh the value of the MIGO against the value of the contract. And if this is the type of contract that is so chomer that the Besdin has certified it, then a MIGO is not enough. That's Rashi's approach. But Tosfos is telling that the MIGO that we have over here should actually not be affected because the MIGO is to destroy it. And then she could have destroyed the whole thing. So Tosfos has got a completely different idea. Tosfos says it's talking about to not believe her ability to have destroyed it before this whole thing had come up. But once a Besdin notes that this shtar actually exists, so then she can't have said it then, that she couldn't have burnt it up then because we knew about it. So because of that, she's not believed now. The MIGO is not based on what could have been. It's got to be based on what can be now. That's what Tosfos says. And she now can no longer say that because the Besdin knows about it. Okay. Anyway, there was here too a different story. And it was set over, because of the way that we had the two versions, remember? So Rava had, is what we said over there in this second approach, was asked by Rava to Reb Nachman with the following. if you've got a simpon, remember, simpon is something that invalidates a shtar. So let's say it was a receipt, right? So this receipt has on it witnesses. So it said over there that that needs to also be certified, and therefore, yitkayem b'chotamav, you bring in the witnesses, you make sure that this is their signature, or you bring in people that know the signature. So it also requires certification. Now, suppose if it doesn't have any signatures on it, but it was given to an escrow holder. So in alavia edim, but it was now yotze mitachat yidei shalish, or maybe it appears as a, this was paid on such and such a date that is written directly beneath the signatures on the original contract. Now, there's no way that anybody could have written that unless it's true, because that contract was being held by the lender. And if the lender wrote that this contract was paid, I mean, who else wrote on his contract this was paid? So, in that case, how would it have gotten that somebody wrote it while it was being held in escrow or while it was being held by the lender? So in that case, it should be fine, and that would make it kosher. But that means that we trust an escrow holder, because we're saying that if it says that, then we understand that, look, this is his reputation's on the line, and we see from there that a shalish is meheman. Oh, that is indeed to yufta derib Nachman. You cannot tell an escrow holder, we don't believe your testimony. Anyway, getting back now to the question of the machlokes. How long after a court has given a verdict, can you present new evidence? So, kiyata revdimi om Rabbi Yochanan, look, la'olam mevi raya v'soter, you can always bring new evidence until, now, this is very strange, as we're about to show, ad sheyistatim ta'anotav, until he has no more ta'anot at all. So he's got absolutely no argument about his side of the case, and then he suddenly says, okay, where are these witnesses, Mr. X and Mr. Y, that I've been holding for just such a situation? Now, that's a contradiction, a gufakash. First, you say that he can bring a raya until he admits that he has nothing further to say. Acha yisatem ta'anotav, right? Now, that's going according to the Rabbanan, who argue on Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, and they say once a guy admits that he has nothing else to say, he has no other rayas, he has no other edim, the din is that he cannot suddenly present them. And then you say, no, but that's only when do we say such a thing? Only if it's clear that this is false, because the whole time he's been saying, I don't have anything, and then in the middle of the case, he suddenly comes along and says, all right, where are my edim that I've been waiting for? So, but that means that it's only there that it's very suspicious. That even Reb Shimon ben Gamliel said, right? But if you don't do it in that way and you just bring rayas later, it's mashma that it would be good like Reb Shimon ben Gamliel. Well, how can Reb Yochanan say both of those things at the same time, where one is going like the Rabbanan and one is going like Reb Shimon ben Gamliel? Now, I know what you're going to say. You're going to say that, well, no, it was completely consistent with Reb Shimon ben Gamliel's approach. And the second part is his definition. What do I mean when we say, yistatem ta'anotav, ay, ach yistatem ta'anotav, means that he gets desperate. That's what it means. And he suddenly says, okay, bring in these witnesses, but that would be actually a yistatim ta'anotav after he said that he has no any kind of evidence. So that's basically this case that we had. If he brings it later, then it would be good. Okay, so then it's only when he says it immediately upon saying, I have no further rayas, let my witnesses appear. But if it would be the next day, and he says suddenly, maybe that's good. And that would be what Reb Shimon ben Gamliel says, right? No, because Ha'omar Rabba Bar Bachana, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Kol makom shoshana Reb Shimon ben Gamliel b'mishnatenu, halacha kamoto, chutz mi orev v'tzidon v'raya achrona, which is this particular case. So that means Reb Yochanan does not agree to what it was that Reb Shimon ben Gamliel holds. So how could you say that Reb Yochanan meant this to be consistent with Reb Shimon ben Gamliel and to explain Reb Shimon ben Gamliel as referring to, in this case, that it's only if he said it at the time of the din, if he himself doesn't agree with Reb Shimon ben Gamliel that you can ever produce it afterwards if you admitted that you don't have any? So I don't understand. I mean, Reb Yochanan is simply contradicting himself. Ella, I'll tell you, Reb Shmuel bar Yehuda, when he came, the author of Shmuel bar Yehuda, he quoted Reb Yochanan as saying that you can always, not what we said, but rather you can always, there's no time limit, you can always bring a raya to cancel a case. That's what he said. So even though he said he seems to be stuck, so the court says, all right, do you have anything else to say? Do you have any kind of relevant documents? Do you have any kind of witnesses? And then he said, no, at that point, there's nothing he can do. He can't present new tainas with new evidence. All right, so now if that's what Reb Yochanan said, then Reb Yochanan continues to say, let's say that these Edim that he's bringing have shown up after being overseas for the past 20 years. So Avobo Edim Imidinat Hayam. Or all of a sudden, somebody shows up and he's got this diskette that's got all of his father's transactions on it. Or Shahita Diskia Shal Aviv Mufkedet Biyad Acher. So this other person says, oh, I didn't realize that I was needed. You know that your father did leave all of his USB things in my rishus. Why don't we take a look at it? So in that case, of course, Arezem Evirai Abisoter, because we see clearly there was no way that he could have brought these witnesses who were living in Timbuktu, and there was no way that he would know that this diskette was available. And so because of that, this was the same idea that we had before, that, of course, everybody would agree in such a case, you can bring it. Kiyotar of Dimi Omer Rabbi Yochanan, another psak that we have of Rabbi Yochanan here, is that Hatokef et Chaveiro Bedin, we've got a guy who is very, very much a lawfare kind of guy. He's going after somebody, and he's absolutely bringing one thing after another, and he's constantly harassing him. So if one of them says, meaning him, this guy who's driving the other guy crazy, I want to litigate this right here, Nidon Kan, right here where I can continue to bring in my new stuff, right? And the other guy says, no, actually, I'm really sick and tired of being harassed by the kind of guy who isn't even embarrassed at how he acts in the courtroom, and he's very, very loud, aggressive, and always has something to say about what the Dayanim are saying. I want to go to a highly respected Besdin where this idiot will shut up and where we can just concentrate on the din and not on all of these peripherals. So that is actually a valid kind of taina. And even though normally we're not going to force a person to go to a distant court, in this case, kofino tova yelech lemakom avad, the local court can force him to actually go to the recognized Vaad, which is the greater Talmid HaChachamim, and that's where they're going to have to go. So that's simply because he's messing up himself by acting this way. Amar lefanav Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe, I don't understand. What do you mean we can force him to go to the Beit HaVad? What if the airline ticket to the Beit HaVad is double the price of what it is that the case is about? I mean, does this make sense? Mishin Oshebech Havero Mana. He owes $100 to a guy, so now he's going to have to pay another $100 for the ticket besides the money that he's owed? I don't think that that's right. I say, Kofinotovadan Beiro, Itmar Nami, Omer of Safra, Shnayim Shinitat Smubadin. We've got these guys that are being very aggressive. Echad Omer Nadun Khan, V'echad Omer Nelech L'Mokom HaVad. We force a guy to have the court locally go ahead and paskin. You can't make a person pay money to go to a different court. Now you'll say, but I mean, this court is not as expert. So what? If he raises an issue that they feel that they're not expert enough to determine, they can always be kotvim v'shochin. They can always send a shaila to the Mokom HaVad, which does not cost an airline ticket. The Ima Amar. How about if the local court actually decides, and whoever it decided against, and he was claiming the whole time, this court doesn't know what they're doing, I want to go to the Mokom HaVad. So what if he says to the court, okay, I want you to write up your verdict with the logic of the verdict, because I intend to refer this to a higher court. Then he can actually demand that from the court. And Imam Arkitvu, utnuli mi ezetam dantuni, I insist that you write it up, kotvim venotnim lo, they would actually have to do that. This is not every case, but a case where the court forced somebody, subpoenaed him, because he didn't want to go to that court, then he can claim, look, the reason I didn't want to go to the court is because I wanted a higher court to look at this. He can claim that he has a right to a written verdict, fully explained, and in fact, we can demand that the court give it to him. There are cases where it's clear who's got to go where. So let's say you have a Yevama who is located in one city, and she needs the Yavam to give her chalitza. Well, she can't have the Yavam called to a different city and pay an airline ticket to be mater her. She's going to have to go to the trouble and expense, because she's the one who wants to be muteret, and therefore, if they're in different places, she's got to travel to where he is. And, okay, I mean, how far would that be? Omar Reb Ami, well, you need to have the bezdin. So even if it means going from Tveria, Tveria had excellent bate dinim, right? And it was the top. Even if you're going to go to Tzipori, which doesn't have a level of a bezdin that is as great as the bezdin in Tveria, it doesn't matter. Because in terms of the tircha that's involved, she's responsible to go to him. She can't say, well, here's the best bezdin. Omer of Kahana, you know where we see this in a pusik? Vikar ulo ziknei iro. Note that it says that the dayanim in his town call him in to be matir this yavama or to take her. It doesn't say ziknei ira, it says ziknei iro. So it's very clearly he who has the right to insist that she shows up to his bezdin. And another case, Omer HaMeimar, Hilchata, the halacha basically about what we were talking about earlier, where they're fighting, kofino tovayelech l'mokom avad. We can force people to go to a better court. Omer le Ravashi la Meimar. Didn't we just say that we paskin, Reb Elazar paskin, that we force him and he has to be done locally? And why, I mean, he explained himself very well why that would be true. I mean, it was a very good argument. He's got to pay money to double his cost because the guy wants to be somewhere else. Why are you saying that he has to actually go in the end? Says Amemar, what I mean is that that argument is only relevant to a case where the Love was telling the Malve, so now the guy who owes the money, he wants to go somewhere else. And the Malve is trying to get his money. So I was saying, the Reb Elazar was saying, I understand, he has to pay for an airline ticket in order to get his money back? That doesn't make sense. He's bad enough, he's got to get his money back. But to pay extra $100 to get back $100? But what I was talking about, we were talking about over here, the lender, if the lender wants to go to the Mokom HaVad, then Eved Loveh Le'ish Malveh. You know that we've had this situation before, that we've seen many times, The very fact that you're dependent on this person for that money makes you, so to speak, a slave to whatever he desires. There was another Misa, which relates to this, in which the Bezdin, which was in Tveria, sent a letter to the Resh Galuta, who was Mar Ukva, and they wrote a very, very mechubad. They addressed him with tremendous kavod, and they wrote him like this: "L'dezizle kevar bitya, to the man who shines like the son of Bitya Bat Paro," meaning like Moshe Rabbeinu's face shine. Shalom. Now there's this guy, Ukvan, not to be confused with Mar Ukva, obviously. This guy, Ukvan, who is in your area, he's a Bavli, and he sent a complaint against a fellow called Yirmiyah. And he said, "Yirmiyah, achi, hevir alai et aderech. This guy has really screwed me over." So derech, of course, often means something sexual, which is derech gever ba'alma, like the Gemara says in Kiddushin. So one approach to this is he castrated me and I'm suing him. Okay. But the simple meaning, I mean, is you could use words like that to mean literally the derech, you know. So he took off some of my property to build a road, whatever. Anyway, so we are asking you to tell this Yirmiyah character to Imrulo. So you have to basically deal with him. And not only that, he see uhu virepanenu betveria. Force him to come here to Tveria, which makes no sense. You say Imrulo, which means that you are the one who's supposed to adjudicate this, right? Zogufakash. First, Amart Imrulo, which sounds like we're saying, Deinuatun, we're asking you to take care of this case. And then we say, make sure that he comes right here to Tveria. Alma Shidaru Hacha, which means that they seem to be telling him, you've got to send him to this Bezdin for Don. So what is that supposed to mean? Elohaki Tamri. What they were trying to say was, Imrule Dayanuato. That means you should try to get this done. Now, if he accepts you as the Dayan, fine. But if worse comes to worse and he doesn't accept your din, then you've got to force him to come here in Tveria, and we will judge him here in Tveria. So if he insists that the bigger Talmidei Chachamim are in Tveria, which is true, even though Mar Ukva had more kayach than them because he was a Resh Galuta, so then force him to come over here to Tveria. Rav Ashi says, no, that's not what the story was. The story was that they were dealing with Knasot. And Knasot, you cannot judge in Bavel, right? Because we said, even if the local, the Bezdin in Eretz Yisrael is, normally it gives Rishus to act as our Shluchim, that's only in Dine Mominus and not in Dine Knasais. And therefore, if this was a Dine Knas, then they're the only ones, the Bezdin and Tveria, the only ones that are going to be able to deal with it. So then why did they tell Maruk? Why, I understand, but they said Imrulo. Why did they say Imrulo? If they're the only ones that are able to be done, they should have just said, send him here to Tveria and we'll put the rule of the law on him. The truth is, they didn't need to say Imrulo. Don't you see that this entire letter was a letter that was meant to indicate kovod for Mar Ukva? It wasn't a legal letter. What do you mean? To shiny face like Moshe? Like, come on. So the idea over here is that they want to ask Mar Ukva to do something. And it's not kovod to ask Mar Ukva, as the Resh Galuta, see to it that so-and-so appears here. It's very insulting. You can't do anything, but we can. So because of that, they said, Imrulo, you deal with this case. But bottom line is, he's got to come here to Tveria. That's what they were saying. So, they were just basically writing in a very respectful fashion. And to close that very respectful fashion, we have our very own shiny-faced Mar Richie to be ready to respond to Hadranalach Zeborelo Echad. Lovely. Well, you better start funking on then right now. We can still hope, Sir Richard. We can still hope that at the last moment there shall be a reprieve. Echad dinei momenos, ve'echad dinei nefashot, bedrisha ve'chakirah.